I think Mickey Mouse is a little full of himself.
Okay.
He seems like he has kind of the protagonist, like, I'm the protagonist vibe about him.
Main character, yeah, for sure.
Everything sort of revolves around him, when realistically speaking, he's just, like, wearing red shorts, and that's basically all he has going.
He's a mouse in red shorts, and nobody wants to talk about it. Thank you, Russ.
And, like, Donald is sick, and, like, he's too proud to talk about it, but he's, like, really sick.
What's wrong with Donald?
So when Mickey comes around...
He's just really sick. It's kind of
personal. He's really, really... It's a big sickness. And every time Mickey comes around, it's like, oh, no, I gotta have some of Minnie's crackers. And Donald's like, yeah, man, I'll get right on that.
Hey, pal, I'm throwing a fruit salad party for all my friends. It's like, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds I'd love.
I know.
I'm trying to get it together. I know.
And like Goofy knows, but he promised Donald not to say anything. So he's like, gosh, Mick, maybe we should give him a little space.
Maybe if you took a little more time to get to know him. Deepen your relationship. Maybe give him some raw fish and gems.
He seems confused when you want to hang out with other people, too. Like, if you have someone else with you, Mickey's like, I get it. A little bit of strange, huh?
Merlin's an actual wizard, Mickey. I want to know about that.
So Minnie's a ghost. Weird. Let's just go. I want to talk about this game and nothing else. My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Christopher Thomas Plant, and I know the best game of the week.
My name is Russ Frostrick, and I know the best game of the week.
Welcome to the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in home interactive entertainment. This week, we're talking about Disney Dreamlight Valley. Chris Plant, how did that happen?
The people at Disney saw Animal Crossing and they're like, I would like some of that money, please. And then the people at Game Loft, who love to make money on mobile games, are like, sure.
Sure.
And now we're there. Now it's just real. They did it. They both did the thing. And let me tell you, I'm in love. I'm accidentally in love.
I'm ironically in love. Okay, we'll be right back to talk about this, believe it or not. Oh, God. I spent a good amount of this week wondering if you guys, wondering if you guys were tricking me. Like, I was the only one playing it. And then when you got here, it'd be like, surprise. We're throwing you a birthday party, like, or something. I don't know what I thought would happen, but I could not fathom it.
It's funny because, and you didn't know about this game until we mentioned it while we were recording last week, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
And now it's here, and you're experiencing everything you've ever dreamed. Every time you go to Disneyland, this is what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. Just immersing myself in a wild hodgepodge of Disney characters that resembles nothing as coherent as the bedroom wall of a 10-year-old cutting pictures out of Disney Adventures magazine and taping them to their wall in a bizarre melange of Disney IP.
Can I ask a question up front?
Yeah.
Am I the only person who's probably going to put this in their top 10 games of the year list?
I adore this game.
Oh, thank God.
No.
Okay, good.
It's great. No, it's
okay.
It's great. It's great.
should we explain like what the loop is?
Can I try?
Yeah, please do.
Okay, you've played farming games like Stardew Valley, right? Let's start with Stardew Valley, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Although I think Animal Crossing is probably a better comparison. I think it's a little closer to Animal Crossing because of this place called Dreamlight Valley. It's been taken over by this dark force, and you, through the power of gardening and friendship, are going to beat back the forces of darkness.
Wait. I'm sorry. Gardening, mining, fishing, power of friendship.
What mine was sort of an oversimplification for comedic effect.
But I'm glad no. But I think it's important that everybody knows Mining and fishing. Thank you.
Mining and fishing. Yeah, obviously mining and fishing. The Disney games do this a lot, actually, mm-hmm. where whenever there is a mashup of IP, there's always like a centralized, like, I don't know, it's just kind of like a Disney area. It's just like real Disney looking. And you use this hub world to lure in other beloved Disney characters to your valley to come live in your valley. So you have to make them like the home they'll like and do quests for them and help cook meals for them and do all those kind of like life sim type things that you would
lure in. Sounds a little nefarious, but honestly that's pretty accurate. Like, you are kind of,
I've said exactly the word I meant to use. You do lure them in. Yeah, you set honeypots for them and then you imprison them in your valley.
Is Pooh in this game? I haven't seen him yet.
I don't know. With the amount of bananas I've been eating, I sure hope Pooh's in this game, or else it's going to be a rough time. Hey.
Isn't there like weird rights? I always noticed in Kingdom Hearts and all the Kingdom Hearts games, it always opened up and it was like, characters trademark Disney, except for Pooh, who is here on special loan from the author of the Pooh books.
Well, yeah, Pooh's in the public domain now.
That's wild.
Well, but only early Pooh, not Disney Pooh.
Right, so that's correct. The distinction, like right?
Yeah, Winnie the Pooh is in the public domain.
Winnie a Pooh is.
Winnie a Pooh.
I don't...
Anyway, Wally's in this, so who cares?
Wally is definitely in this. Gameloft is such a wild company. They have made Disney games in the past, but they have also made a million games in the past, and not all of them, I would say, are slam dunk hits.
I mean, I would go so far as to say they are the Majesco of games right now.
Yeah.
Reputationally.
Yeah. Like, can you explain that? Because that's a little bit very niche.
I'll be more blunt. I think Gameloft's reputation as a game maker is terrible. Like, I think most people do not get jazzed when they play a Gameloft game, but they do have a shitload of them.
Yeah.
And they basically owned the mobile gaming AA space forever.
Yes, yeah. I will also clarify, most people, by that you mean people who don't play a lot of mobile games. Because I think people who play a lot of mobile games will be like, love it.
If there's like a Need for Speed game or like a whatever, it's almost always like a existing IP. It's always Game Loft.
Yes, Paddington Run was a Game Loft joint.
Sure, or like the Asphalt series.
Yeah, Asphalt, which is like the Dungeon Hunter, I believe.
I'm going to add this by saying, I'm sure there's a bunch of very talented people making games at Gameloft. I think by their nature of working with IP, their schedules are very tight, and there's a limit to how much, quote, creative magic a lot of Gameloft games can have. So I don't want to, like, dunk on these people that are trying to make
a buck. Here's a more mainstream thing than Majesco. They're Activision before Activision stopped making games.
Mm.
Remember when Activision was like, "You're SpongeBob, sure, whatever, we can get, like, five of those out." Like...
They just make a lot of stuff, and not all of it is great, but some of it is great. They just made a Lego Star Wars, like, survival Castaways, I think is what it's called. That's pretty great. They've done a lot of Disney stuff. They made one that was called Disney Magic Kingdoms. That was Disney park management sim, almost, much more than good.
It made me sad.
I thought it was okay, but this is on another level. I don't know that I associate that brand with quality. And so when I saw that they were the developers of this game that I saw a trailer for, I was like, oh, that looks cool. I was like, oh, no, this is... But I think that the amount of polish, and not just polish, but like creativity that has gone into this game is genuinely very impressive.
Hey, before we get off the Gameloft boat, just one more thing. Do y'all know who is the founder of Gameloft?
Isn't it a Ubisoft, like,
It's Michel Guillermo, who is the brother of the Ubisoft guy. And let me tell you, this is the best scenario for a life. Dude founded Gameloft, does not have a Wikipedia page.
That's the dream, right?
Like, you're a gajillionaire, and people, like, you are known as brother of the Ubisoft guy.
Yeah. I think we've talked about, I mean, I think people know the Stardew Valley comparison is so apt that I don't know that there is
there is one mechanic. I think the big difference between this and Stardew and even Animal Crossing is I think there are people, Justin was certainly one of them, who pick up Stardew and they're like, what the fuck am I supposed to be doing? Like, I am overwhelmed. Someone's throwing me seeds. I don't know what to do.
Yes.
And those first few days, you kind of have to figure it out on your own. Find your own fun, whatever. Animal Crossing's gotten a little better at this, but that too is like pretty self-directed. Whereas in Dreamlight Valley, you are given like six quests from the jump. And it's like, oh, Donald Duck or whatever.
Scrooge.
What's the rich duck? Scrooge.
What's the rich duck?
Scrooge needs you to like sell some gems at the store or put up some signs.
Famous mean rich dude ever. Except for Bezos.
So you are given direction in what to do and it progresses you through it.
Thank you, Fresh, for muscling through that.
Yeah, that was a heroic effort.
Yeah,
I think it goes even beyond that because, yes, you're given, like, six things to do right away, and you're told, like, yeah, it's kind of like Animal Crossing, you know, stop by here now and then. And it's like, but there's also 1,000 other sub-quests that you can do. Mm-hmm. Here's a list of them. Oh, and as you complete them, we'll just keep giving you more on top of that, so you basically never see the bottom of the coffee cup.
And it's
Animal Crossing, for what it's worth, has those too, where it's like pick three, fifty plants.
It's not narrative in the way that this game is narrative, and that was probably the most unexpected thing for me. Where it's like this dark force that has taken over the world, which is called the Forgetting. Like all of the characters are kind of struggling with that, and anytime there are lots of prompts for you to respond. Okay. Mickey's one of the first people you
talk
meet.
About Minnie.
Mickey is really struggling with the fact that Minnie is gone.
He's struggling with the loss of Minnie. I mean, like, literally, that is what's happening. He's leaving Minnie.
So much worse than that. Minnie is gone, and yet her ghost haunts the valley. Like, you'll be farming your, like, I don't know, your canola oil or whatever. And then you're like, in the distance by the river, you'll see the reflection of Mickey's ghost. And you're like, that can't be right. Right. And no, sorry, thank you.
It is wild to me that this game, there is such a weird hodgepodge of Disney characters in it. And it's not weird. I mean, there's like, we're not going into like, you know, we're not digging up like Oswald the Rabbit or Mortimer Mouse or something. But like, it is a weird sort of thing where like, Ursula will pop up and she'll be like, go unlock this secret cave for me. And I know that's a bad idea. And my character, who seems to know everybody in Disney, does not seem aware that she should not be helping Ursula. And then Ursula's like, now build me a house on the beach. Like, no way. You're the worst. By the way, it's $10,000. Like, I don't want to do that. You suck.
Has anyone in the game, I saw this in a trailer, has anyone met Scar yet?
No.
Okay, so Scar is in the game. I don't know if it's also another character you can invite. Scar fucking murdered Mufasa.
Yeah, right.
You don't want him in your town.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of weirdness like that where, like, the Disney IP is like treated in a whimsical way, but not in a precious way. And that just leaves, like, weird stuff like... You can eat raw fish to get energy, and then to be friends with people and build your level, you give them gifts. And it is so bizarre to have Mickey like, hey, you're my best pal, and if you bring me 3 peridots, I'll really like you then. I mean, I like you a lot now, but what if you brought me a fish sandwich? It's
really a transactional relationship.
That right. feels pretty in line with the Disney company.
Yeah, sure, fair enough. You know? Fair enough.
I was surprised at the amount of... like freedom that Game Loft seemed to have been given to make these characters say things that I certainly wouldn't expect to hear about Mickey's sort of depressive episode that he finds himself in. Mm-hmm. But it is somewhat refreshing to see these like incredibly protected characters used in that way. I also wanted to say we've compared this game to a lot of things. I would say in terms of presentation, this game gives me huge Viva Pinata vibes. And
maybe a lot just of like, chunky sound design that really like reinforces the stuff you're doing. Lots of like flashy effects whenever you do literally anything.
Yeah, it feels like a rare title. Like I know that's sort of an abstract thing, but I feel like if you've played Fable and played Viva Pinata, you kind of know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Out of curiosity, what platform did you guys play on?
Steam Deck, baby.
I played on Steam Deck.
Okay, I played it on Switch first.
Okay, so yes, this is what I did want to discuss. And Griffin, you could add some perspective here. My biggest problem with this game is I've been playing it on the Switch because it is a really good game for Switch if you got kids, because it's very easy to like pass the Switch around and you guys, you know, let them take turns. But like, it is chunky. Like on the Switch.
Oh, is it?
It is not running great. The load times are long. The frame rate is bad. Like, bad.
Did you use the cross save feature?
See, that was my issue with the Switch. Is I did not think the performance was terrible on the Switch. I thought it was passable, and it is like the most convenient way for me to play games with Henry. But like the very first time you open up a chest, and it's like you should do cross save so that you know you can use these one time rewards if you play this game on other platforms. And I was like, oh, okay. And then of course, like. That shit never works good on Switch. Like, never. And so, like, it was impossible to get that to, like, authenticate and connect. And so I was like, well, I just started, and I don't want to, you know, lose this progress or anything like that. So I switched to Steam Deck, and it was, it plays a million times better.
Yeah, I feel like if I was going to keep playing this, I would switch, because even things like loading up your inventory or opening a package, there's a good like second of delay before you actually do it. And that really slows down the experience. I do also wish there was like a little bit of faster running. Like for some reason, I switched my shoes at some point. And this is, again, my experience is just the Switch, so maybe exclusive to that. But like, I switched my shoes at some point and I started running twice as fast. But the frame rate didn't alter, so I just looked like I was Benny Hilling like around the world. I was like, this is fantastic.
What? There are shoes that increase your run speed?
No, it glitched.
Oh.
it was a glitch.
Well, there is a way to increase. Buttman 69, I'm here with a great new glitch. Speed run, any percent.
You put on the Astro Boots while you're force feeding Goofy more wheat. And
there is a way to,
you can't increase your run speed.
How do you do that?
You eat meals. If your stamina bar is blue, and when it's full and you eat meals, it'll turn yellow.
Did you eat the shoes? Maybe.
And then also I put on my Buzz Lightyear baby boots, and I was to infinity and beyond, baby.
Can I talk about Disney adults for a second?
Yeah, please.
I apologize because I'm
fresh.
I'm surrounded by Disney adults, so I apologize in advance. It just seems a little weird to me.
Oh, okay.
That this full on, like, the only character models that you can pick are like basically like 20 somethings. And it just seems weird to see one lone 20 something running around a Disney world like solo. And I'm not judging, but I am.
You are doing it a little bit.
And it just seems, I'm not saying that there need to be kids there, but there's no multiplayer in this game. So just like this random ass 20 something wearing like an exclusive Mickey hat.
So do you want to be controlling a 38-year-old man just running around?
No, I'm saying it should be kids.
You want to control a child.
But you own a house.
Just like Animal Crossing. No. Like Animal.
Fresh, you're forgetting that kids have their own dreams, and their dream is not to be a 6-year-old who's renting a house. It's
but Animal Crossing, I think,
like,
walks that line where it could read as an adult or a kid kind of thing. Whereas here, they're like full on, like, oh, this person has a mortgage.
With a lot, Russ, the, just telling kids from adults, because it feels like you've really forgotten how to dream. How to dream big, because this 41-year-old,
it just seems fucking weird.
This game has actually a lot to teach you.
Yeah, I think you might have learned missed some of the lessons. you know what is irritating for me about this is I really think it's fun, like aesthetically, and I think it's kind of cute. I kept getting hung up on how many like quality of life upgrades and changes that like I, as someone who, you know, doesn't want to spend 100 hours on this. Like, the backpack is really restrictive. Like, the amount of stuff you can carry around is pretty restrictive. And all flowers killed me. Like, the floor gets littered with stuff, and you end up picking up these flowers. And sometimes you need a flower for a quest. But, like, every different color of every strain of flower takes up its own backpack slot. So, like, you have to be careful to not pick up flowers. I spent way too much time. Like,
did you build more chests?
Yeah, but I don't know at any given point, like, what I need to be storing and what's, like, worth keeping and things like that.
So, what I did with that is I built chests and I put them in certain areas. So, like, where I do most of my flower harvesting, I put a chest outside there. And where I do a lot of my mining, I put a chest out there. And then I, like, just fast travel because it takes like 2 seconds to a chest that I need because I put them right by fast travel spots. I mean, it's definitely gaming it, but I didn't find it.
No, that's a good idea. I think my experience was colored by like even going into the menu to get fast travel slots like took a few seconds.
Laggy.
So like it was a lot of times quicker to run than it was to like get into the menu and let it load and everything.
I guess the thing for me is I was so impressed by the like the creature comforts of this game, especially compared to like an Animal Crossing and somewhat to a
I think it's Stardew better Valley. Than Animal Crossing. I think it's worse than Stardew Valley. I think
from
that's
the beginning,
sort of...
from the beginning, I think it's better than Stardew Valley, but you can unlock stuff in Stardew that gets you to that place. But like the fact that like when you want to water plants, which is the most annoying thing in any farming game from the top, that you can water like 8 plants right away, more than that, right?
And they grow in like 20 minutes. I mean, depending on the fruit, like it's fast.
You can really also fast. Like just hold down a button and you will just go from spot to spot planting like your chosen seeds instead of having to like do it one button press at a time.
Turbo harvests and the plant will just glow gold and then you can harvest a bunch from it for no real reason.
I mean, it's cool to see a studio like Gameloft that has mastered all of the like feel lessons of mobile games of, hey, that sure feels good. I'll keep playing for a few more seconds and putting it in a legit video game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. And then they got the legit video game part right.
And the legit video game part is, that actually works really well because there are a bunch of like dumb tasks, you know, like meaningless, like collect 10 fish or whatever. But that stuff kind of happens organically as you're doing the more structured things. So every once in a while, you just go to collect your like your Dreamlight winnings from completing all these like little side objectives and stuff. And you're not having to like focus on it. But it does give you the sense that like even if you're not right in the middle of something, you might as well pick up some different items because you might need them later or you might need to be harvesting. And it also you can have friends with you. Like, you can ask any of the characters to, like, hang out with you, and then when you're doing the little piddly things like mining and fishing and all that stuff, it increases your friendship level. Just because, I guess, Moana's like, fuck, you are so good at planting corn. You're my dude forever. This is so real to me.
Should we talk about how this game is, like, how it works pricing-wise? Because I think it's pretty confusing and... people should
I would
be
love
aware.
You to explain it to me, because I'm confused.
Yeah, okay, so... right now, Disney Dreamlight Valley is in early access, which means the only way to play this game right now is to pay $30. With that $30, you get a bunch of furniture, some clothing, and you get moonstones, which is the premium currency of this game. You get a shitload of moonstones. Eventually, I don't know how long this is going to take, but eventually Dreamlight Valley will go to 1.0 and become a free-to-play game. In which case, you obviously, when you start playing, you won't get any of the clothing or the moonstones or anything like that. Now, you might be asking, what do the moonstones do?
What do the moonstones do?
Good question, Justin. The moonstones unlock, at least what I've seen, the moonstones unlock premium, effectively, they're like battle passes for cosmetics. So right now, there's a Pixar Fest going on, and you can buy the Pixar Fest battle pass. I'm sure it's called something else. And basically, you'll do quests and unlock cosmetics within that over the span of however long it is. I think it's like 2 months, the battle pass runs. I do not know, and I kind of have an inkling, that later on, they will begin to lock like character quests and new characters behind moonstones as well. I'm not 100% sure of that, but I kind of feel like they might go down that road. In which case it could potentially get pretty expensive and potentially predatory if your kid really likes, I don't know, fucking Brer Rabbit. But in this case,
I don't think they're going to have that one in it.
Yeah.
But in this case, for right now, it is really just cosmetics. And for what it's worth, you can unlock some of those cosmetics for free, but it just takes a lot longer, and a lot of them are also locked.
I will say that the cosmetics also, this is not my jam, and I imagine we have maybe aged out of this a little bit, but the outfits and stuff are, my kids were wild about them. I mean, there's like so many, they did spend a lot of the time just switching out their outfits and collecting, you know, different skirts and dresses and hats and stuff. And it actually got to a point where I was like, okay, girls, daddy's really got to go get Goofy some more tomatoes, okay? Or else I'm not going to see much of this game other than this menu of you guys changing your clothes. But they're very cute. A lot of them are, like, inspired by... You know what? A lot of them are, like, Disney bounding, which if you don't know, you're not allowed to dress like a Disney character if you're an adult in the parks. So people dress in, like, color blocks and things like that that sort of, like... you know, nod towards a character's iconic look. And a lot of the outfits are like that.
I tried to make a Virtua Griffin. And I looked like I was 20 years old, but with a sort of gray undercut.
Okay.
just not the best sort of simulacrum I've ever created, but the fashions are still fantastic. There was like a hoodie that I was like, man, I would wear that to the park in real life. That's pretty stylish.
I think it's very clear they spent a ton of time on the outfits and stuff like that. The last game that did this was actually pretty recent. Saints Row spent like a ton of time and effort making like really robust costume like options. And I think it really pays off because it makes you feel more attached to your character, and it makes you feel like you're unlocking a lot more, even if it's not like gameplay content.
Yeah.
So props to that. I think this is one area where they trump Animal Crossing and Stardew, because you've got like a necklace and glasses and a hat and a shirt and a sweatshirt on top of the shirt. There's just like way more options and layers, which I guess is the upside of having a 20-something. You could like wear a lot more stuff.
I mean, I could wear anything. You know me. I'm a real clothes horse.
I know.
But I'm basically, I'm still basically in my 20s.
To put a bow on this, $30, I mean, free is a hell of a deal for this. $30, I think, is still, compared to a lot of games that we've played this year that cost 60 or 70 bucks, this feels like a very full game to me so far. Yeah. And I'm like probably 20 hours in.
Is this the sort of thing where your all's appreciation of it is like more sort of, are you appreciating this, or is this the kind of thing you think that you'll stick with beyond today's episode? And if so, like, what is pulling you through? Like, what is it that you are enjoying about it? Because right now I kind of feel closer to like, oh, this is neat and I'm having a little bit of fun with it, but it doesn't feel like maybe like a long-term thing, even though I think my kids will probably stick with it. For sure.
Yeah, I think Plant is the one that's probably furthest out of any of us. I just finished the like Wally quest, which is like the first like leave your world and go bring someone back quest.
Well, and after that, I was like, "Which one do you choose?" Because I had Moana first.
Yeah, there's a few different options, but after I completed that, and they were like, "Oh, you should build Wally a house," I was like, "Nah, I'm good." And it's not because I didn't like it, but I definitely like could extrapolate what the next 10 or 20 hours was going to look like, because I'm sure I would unlock the next one. And, you know, then I'm doing little quests for that person.
It's pretty different than that, actually. But yeah,
okay.
That was my concern early on, that it would be kind of episodic like that. But it takes a pretty different direction.
You want to, again, you've played more than anyone.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that you did the Wally one is, like, kind of the worst starting quest. If anybody's going to choose one, I would start with there's a Ratatouille one, and I would do that.
Yeah, that was the other one.
I wish I had started with that.
Yeah, the Ratatouille, you, like, go to the kitchen in Paris, and it's, like, you learn a lot more about cooking. You get a whole bunch of recipes. Then you come and build his house in the city. And the second that you build his house, it also builds a restaurant for the city, where you can, like, buy a lot of the ingredients that you need for different things. And then because you now have a restaurant in your city, there's a whole bunch of quests that are, like, built around running a restaurant. So different, like, characters now want to come and eat their meals at different times of the day. So it's like, oh, well, somebody's going to come because it's tied to a real clock. Merlin's going to come for breakfast. Mm. And he's going to want these things.
Speaking of that, that reminded me, you can always open up the map and see exactly where anybody's ass
love
is.
It.
Yes.
Love it.
As Merlin, move. I know, I got exactly Merlin's ass. This map is so good that if Minnie's ghost appears, it shows Minnie on the map. Like, hey, Minnie's here. Isn't that weird? Her ghost is still haunting you.
Yeah. And then the other part of the game that's different than that, because the area that y'all are talking about is in the kind of like Disney, iconic Disney castle. But most of the stuff that you're actually unlocking are these like other parts of the main map. So there's like a elephant graveyard area, again, dark.
I guess that's where Scar is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There are more characters in all these different parts. There's kind of like a frozen area. They kind of find ways to introduce characters who are going to live in the town in different ways. Some of them, it's just like, oh, they're just already inhabitants. And then other people are the people that you're kind of bringing in and building houses for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will play a lot more of this game. I know that there's like the Toy Story expansion coming, I guess, later this year. And I'm extremely excited about that. But I mean, the big thing is I have desperately needed one of those games that I can play while like Mosey's having dinner and I can kind of pay attention to the game, but kind of not. And this is, I mean, it's perfect for that. I mean, Griffin, you mentioned the hold down a button to do all your farming. That's really nice in terms of like letting me get out any grinding that I would need to do. But mostly it's, you know, I like Disney stuff. I like seeing what all the characters do. And I like that the game itself around it is good enough to hold my attention and not feel like a waste of my time. Because if what I wanted was just Disney, like there's a trillion games, Gameloft made plenty of them, that could, you know, whet the appetite. But this being like actually a solid game, I'm pretty stuck in it.
Wow. Yeah, Disney Dreamlight Valley. I would not have expected it. That this is a thing. I would say this. If you don't know for sure, if you're on the fence about this, I think you would be fine to wait until this is a little bit more, especially if you're playing on the Switch, because I hope that there will be some like...
It's on Game Pass.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Is it currently on Game Pass right now? I didn't know that.
Yep. Yeah. And on Steam, it is overwhelmingly positive right now with 2,600 reviews,
so
which I am
bananas.
Shocked by. Like... I mean, everything about this game is the best kind of surprise.
Yeah.
Hey, should we go to the B segment?
Let's do it. Let's go.
Justin, you reviewed a game for Polygon.com.
That's right. I'm not just a pretty face. I'm also got away with words too, you know? I talked about Return to Monkey Island.
Okay, so Return to Monkey Island. I've been to this island in past years, and now I'm coming back to it.
Uh-huh. Yes, the okay, Monkey Island, because we got a lot of children who listen to this show, just young kids. Monkey Island is a wild franchise, the chronology, which the weirdness of it did not strike me until I wrote the review for this game. So Monkey Island is an adventure game series, one of the like landmark LucasArts adventure game series. You play a pirate called Guybrush Threepwood, who is trying to become a mighty pirate, and he's facing off against the ghost pirate LeChuck, who is his enemy, with the help of Governor Elaine Marley, who is also his wife now and is also no longer the governor. They have always been like very silly, punny sorts of experiences. They were designed in like counterpoint to some of the harder core adventure games where like death was on the table. Like, you can't really die in a Monkey Island game, and that was sort of a big innovation at the time. Like, they wanted you to experiment and do silly stuff, and, you know, there would be written a lot of gags, you know, if you tried to do a weird combination of items. And that is another, like, hallmark of the series, is, like, sort of outside of the box, to put it kindly, thinking. But the wild thing about this game, the first one came out in 1990. They had a sequel in 91. Okay. Then there's 6 years until The Curse of Monkey Island in 97, 3 years until Escape from Monkey Island, and that's the third one, or the, I guess, the fourth one at that point. And then there was a full 9-year gap between that and Tales of Monkey Island, which was like the Telltale series that was like, when that came out, it was already a nostalgia piece, right? It was already like, whoa, this is wild. You guys are bringing back Monkey Island? Fantastic. Fast forward to 13 years later.
Wow.
And the we've got Return to Monkey Island, brought back from the dead yet again. This time it is being helmed by Ron Gilbert, and the original creators of the game were you had Ron Gilbert and Dave Grossman and Tim Schafer. And obviously Tim Schafer is doing Double Fine type stuff, so he's not on board for this. But Gilbert and Grossman are both back. And that is Return to Monkey Island. It is it looks kind of like, I said in the review, it's kind of like a Henry Selick folding paper doll type look. It's much more aesthetically pleasing than a lot of like the gross polygonal directions that this franchise went into. It's one of those like long running franchise where the best entries are the oldest and the newest. You know what I mean? Mm. There's like a part in the 90s that no one is going to have nostalgia for because it was that horrid 3D that we were all forced to endure. But I don't know what like the questions would be about it, but like that's the pitch.
I guess the question is this. So the game originally was a point and click adventure game. So it was 2D and you'd click around the screen and you'd like, oh, you have an icon, you have a sandwich in your inventory. So you click on the sandwich and then you click on a keyhole. Oh no, that sandwich can't unlock the keyhole. Try something else.
Yeah.
How much of that, I guess, has changed and or modernized to make it maybe a little more palatable for a modern game audience, or is it just like total throwback?
It's not total throwback. So there is still like the get an item, use the item on the thing, but that I feel like is foundational to the genre. What Return to Monkey Island does, so the original games were built on what's called Scum, which is an adventure game engine where you're choosing verbs and then choosing how you like use those verbs on objects in the environment, like
smell the horse,
look at the man, you know, touch, smell the glove, whatever. And
stop smelling things.
Smell the horse. Put the glove on horse.
This does away with this makes it contextual. So if you see a glove, you maybe have like left click can look at the glove, right click will pick up the glove, and it says that on the screen, like what the different clicks would do. So you don't have to choose like what verb you're using to interact with stuff. It's also like fully voiced. A lot of the original performers are back. So like that's really the joy of it, is in the story. And I will say like the puzzles and that stuff like do less to get in the way of
they're not as obtuse as they used
to be. And also there is a casual mode where a lot of the puzzles are sort of like simplified. And there's also a hint book that's great where it's like, I don't know what to do next. And you can ask it a question that will give you like a very well, a very general hint that increases in specificity as you continue to ask for more nudges.
Yeah. No, that's
so good. I never really got like frustrated by any of it in that regard. It's cool because it's very much like a game about its own lineage. It's a game, but not in the sense of like we're bringing back a lot of characters that you know and that's the gag, like that they just happen to be back. That definitely happens a lot. But the game narratively or maybe thematically is very interested in like how things are remembered and how stories change over time. And like Guybrush returns to Monkey Island, and he's actually returning to Melee Island at first, which is like sort of the home base island. And like a lot of people don't remember him, or you know, the town has changed a lot. He makes a lot of comment about how things have gotten like remodeled or whatever. There's a museum where the artifact. This is really pretty meta, but there's a museum on Melee Island that has artifacts from all these previous Monkey Island games, but the curator doesn't know anything about Guybrush Threepwood. So like the it's him like insisting like, yeah, I did this, like I got this thing and like this was my adventure. And the guy's like, I don't know, I haven't heard of you, like that's bizarre, that, you know, I don't quite believe it. But like there's a lot of things like that where it's about history and lineage and narrative, and it doesn't get like heavy-handed with it or anything, but it does interestingly seem to be the creators of the game sort of in conversation with their own legacy, which I think mm-hmm. is kind of interesting for a sort of silly adventure game like this.
Do you think that someone needs that background to like enjoy themselves with this?
It would definitely enhance it, I think. I mean, it's going to be better. There are a few too many characters where there's this like used ship salesman named Stan in a lot of the games, and he's this very goofy looking character with a big cowboy hat, and he's got he's wildly gesticulating his arms all over the place, and the pattern of his jacket does not move as he moves, so you're just seeing like, that's hard to explain unless you see the effect in practice, but like all of those things were in creations of an era where it was much harder to communicate what a character looked like, right? So sure. These visual hallmarks have just been sort of carried through. So if you're new to it, you might wonder, like, this guy looks insane. Why did they do this? And it's like, that's, I don't know. It's just the way he's looked from the beginning. It is the music and the voices are really like, it hit some big nostalgia buttons for me. I did not even realize. Like, hearing Monkey Island music is like very, was very comforting and chill. And Dominic Amato, which is weird, he is like, the voice of Guybrush Threepwood, and he's great, and he has done like almost nothing else. It's very weird. Like, he's done some other like side voices. He's into like dining, and he writes like a dining blog or something, but he just comes back to do these Monkey Island games every, you know, whatever, 10 years whenever he is summoned. But he sounds great. Everybody, there's a lot of returning cast members that are great. LeChuck has a new voice. And that you know is a big deal. I guess the original LeChuck has retired. And didn't
okay,
want to
I thought
return.
He got canceled or something.
No.
Came out heavy for NFTs.
I wish. That would be fantastic. No, he's just out of the game. So they have a new LeChuck, which I only mentioned because it's Jess Harnell. Anyone Jess Harnell?
No, it doesn't ring a bell.
As Crash Bandicoot, so that's pretty good. I like,
Yeah.
Pretty good. I always love the fact that if you guys have never looked at a picture of Jess Harnell,
he looks like Crash Bandicoot.
He looks like Crash Bandicoot. If he was a human being, it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm like trying to think of the last old school adventure game that I've actually finished, and it's been so long. But I don't.
There've been some good like Loom indie ones. I think
that's the thing about this that makes it sort of interesting is like this genre. It's not like it used to be where like this genre just sort of lies dormant until one of these big franchises revives it, right?
Yeah.
It's like these games are getting made very regularly. I mean, there's developers like Watch Jedi or. Some of the others that like
been just, there, done Dan that.
Yeah, they just like specialize in this sort of thing. So that part is not that novel, and there are not big evolutions made to the from it mechanically. But I do think it's very interesting from a like a narrative point of view. It's very pleasant and well meaning and good natured and everything. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems interesting. I certainly for people that want to like dive into the genre that I don't know. You might not get all the references, but I'd imagine from a polish standpoint, it's one of the better ones out there.
And it's been getting really good reviews, which has been nice to say.
Yeah.
It's a good game. Y'all want to open the mailbag?
Sure.
Let's do it.
Do the mailbag. Here's a question from Grant. What do you think should be the first thing that happens when Mickey Mouse enters the public domain in 2024?
Mickey Mouse fucking?
I mean, one, I don't think there's any way it actually happens. It won't. I mean, no, but yes, I think doing it would probably be right. They all did see the Winnie the Pooh horror movie coming out?
Yes. What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wait, is that real?
Yeah, there's a real horror movie starring Winnie the Pooh.
It's Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Okay, so it's using the public domain Winnie, basically.
Correct. Yes. It's not.
Does
like
he look at all like the Disney Winnie the Pooh?
He looks like if like the Rock of Fire explosion or whatever it's called.
Sure.
Had a Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they like have those original illustrations, the A.A. Milne ones that like, you know, look enough like Winnie the Pooh that you get the idea. He's more naked, but other than that.
Let me tell you.
And he's punishing teens for having sex, that kind of deal.
But I do agree, yeah. There's no way that Disney would allow a full public domain Mickey Mouse. They're just going to like continue moving it along.
This one's from Ham. What will be the final thing Disney buys before the apocalypse? I'm going to tweak this to what would you, ignoring the larger philosophical question of Disney having a monopoly on the arts, what would you want Disney to buy?
I don't want Disney to buy anything.
Okay.
What I think they would buy? Shit, man.
Like, CVS could be nicer.
CVS?
CVS?
Pharmacy?
Yeah, I want them to bring their flair to CVS.
That's a fucking great. Hey, Russ, that's great, man. I know you were maybe trying to have a little fun here, but I would love for my local CVS to get a little bit of extra Disney magic for sure.
I'll expand that and just say healthcare in general. Just if I could get on an app, if I had a healthcare magic band and I just scanned it and then a doctor.
Yeah, but you're talking about like financial priority. You're going to have to genie pass your way into like a kidney surgery.
What about policing?
Hey, now we're cooking with.
What if Disney bought the prisons?
These are skits. It's important that you know joke. We're doing skits just here.
Just doing skits
here, and we're not believing this.
I got one more question for
DreamWorks.
You.
DreamWorks. Buy DreamWorks.
Oh my gosh.
But then fucking never make another one.
Shut
it down.
just buy some crap.
Disney bought DreamWorks to shut it down.
We're releasing Shrek into the public domain.
You can see whatever you want. Boss Baby is a free agent.
Puss in Boots and Butts. Just do it. Go for it.
God almighty.
Oh, no.
Make a porno out of it. We don't care. Ruin Shrek.
This is a final question. This Please. One's from Austin. If you could room with any of the Disney characters, who would it be and why?
It would be Buzz Lightyear.
What? Why?
Smallest, least obtrusive.
Well, Remy. I mean, Remy's small and can pull on your hair to help you do things that you can't do yourself.
And can cook.
Well, no.
And can cook.
What do you mean he can't cook?
I mean, he can cook, but he's better at pulling
Anyone
your,
can cook.
He's better at, thank you, he's better at pulling your hair and making you cook, because he's really small. Like, it takes him a while to get to the stuff on the shelves.
Towards the end of the movie, it's clear that he's doing all the cooking. He doesn't need what's-his-name.
Yeah, but I'm saying it would be faster if he just pulled my hair to help me make eggs Florentine or whatever.
It sounds like you want that to happen then.
It sounds like you didn't get past that part in the movie.
It seems like that would be cool if a rat could pull my hair to help me do things I don't know how to do.
Sure.
But I think we are all in agreement that the smallest character would be the best.
If that's the case, then Bug's Life.
Jiminy Cricket, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Osmosis Jones is my favorite Disney character.
Yeah, I feel like A Bug's Life would be better because you basically get one of the kids in the hall, but very tiny. You like whenever it's annoying, you can put them in a jar or something. Jiminy Cricket, I feel like would be judging me constantly.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of songs and judging.
That.
That's it. That's all the questions.
Fantastic.
Hey, honorable mentions.
Yeah.
Fresh.
Anything else?
You've been reading. Is this real? Ugh.
This is real. Y'all, buckle the fuck up, because there is an official Elden Ring manga.
Yeah,
it's only in Japan, although there are English translations of it that you can find on the internet. It is, wait for it, a comedy. The official Elden Ring manga is a comedy portrayal of the events of Elden Ring, complete with, like, the main character is, like, naked almost the entire run of the series. It's quite funny. So please look that up, because it's pretty enjoyable, and I love see...
Is it like an isekai thing of, like, it's about the player playing the game?
No, or, it is in-universe.
Why?
And it, like, legit starts with Melina or whatever, your the lady who comes to you at the fire campfire, and she's like, really? This is all we got? There's no one better? And it kind of just like progresses from there, where you're just meeting the various NPCs of Elden Ring, but everyone is like very disappointed in you.
Wait, is it first person?
There's an actual character.
Okay. I was like, wow, this is really avant-garde.
It's great. There just aren't very many like very successful IPs that have a sense of humor about themselves. And for $1 million, I never would have thought that From Software would be one of the companies that would like have a pretty easy self sense of humor about themselves. And here you go. There's evidence that they indeed are. It rocks.
Griffin, how about you?
Yeah, nothing really worth talking about. I just picked up. So I think I have a pretty comprehensive knowledge of the Final Fantasy universe, but I have never really made much of a dent into 10. But I've had it on the Steam Deck for a while because the PC version of the Final Fantasy X remastered lets you like run the game at 4x speed and turn off random encounters. And so it's like, if this seems like what it would take for me to finally make it into this game. And
10 is Titus? Is that right?
10 is Titus. And Tetis, Blitzball, sorry. And Sin, yeah. And yeah, all that jazz. I've always admired the game. It's just like, it's so slow. It's so slow. Even compared to Final Fantasy games, it's pretty slow. But not when you're running it at 4x speed. I have not been gaming a whole lot. A cold has been ravaging my household, so not a lot of gaming time on the books this week.
Hoops.
Gosh, you know, I don't. I'm still playing Arcade Paradise and still playing Slay the Spire. You know, I hopped back into Solitarica a little bit. And so, yeah, I don't know. Sorry, guys, not a lot of new games over here. Just hanging in there.
Plant, what about you?
I've been playing a lot, but it's all stuff we're going to talk about next week. So for now, I'm going to say that people should read Predator, a memoir, which is a book, like experimental fiction, nonfiction about Predator the movie, written by this dude, Ander Monson, who is one of my favorite, I guess, indie writers. I don't know what you call it in the book world when you mostly write outside of like the major publications. I guess indie writers. Anyway, it's great. It is a recounting of his life and a recounting of the original Predator and a dissection of culture. It's bizarre.
Sorry, just to clarify, when you say his life, do you mean the Predator's life?
Both.
Yeah.
The Predator's life and the author's life.
So, right, but is it in first person from the Predator's point of view?
No.
Okay. Because it's Predator, a memoir, so that implies that it's the Predator's memoir.
He rubbed mud all over his body, which I thought was cheating. I just wanted his spine.
Okay, good clarification.
Why is every human man so big?
Fresh, who do we have to thank?
Yeah, I wanted to thank the following people for writing reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. We have Platoon Sergeant Sean, Lily Sleeper, Jaw Thumb 1, and JD Buffington. Thank you for writing reviews for the Besties on Apple Podcasts. Thank you to everyone else for writing reviews and talking about the show and sharing the word. We really super duper appreciate it.
This week, we talked about Disney Dreamlight Valley. We talked about Return to Monkey Island. The Elden Ring manga, which I guess is only available, I assume, illegally online.
Just Google it, and yeah. it might stumble. I'm not going to give you direction. Google it.
Final Fantasy X, Arcade Paradise, Slay the Spire, and Predator, a memoir. And then next week, basically the big indie games of the season. Just a grab bag full of all these cool indie games. We got Hyper Demon, Metal Hellsinger, Trombone Champ. There's plenty more that we're going to talk about. This is just the beginning. And in the B segment, Deep Rock Galactic. It's happening.
How are we going to find the time to play all these games?
I've already played like most of these. They're great. Okay. It's been a smorgasbord of delicious games.
All right, that is going to be next week. I'm looking forward to that. Be sure to join us again for all that great conversation with the Besties. Because you're the world's best friends. Pick the world's best games. besties.